There I was finding out that this man wasn't my birth father. I understand and acknowledge what a privilege that was that he did that for me now. But then I just felt like very betrayed. It was like everybody knew but me. Every single person that's adopted goes through a traumatic event.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode at Mindful Space. Today we have Vivianne Areola. Did I say that right?
Perfectly.
Welcome. How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for coming. So jumping right into it, we are going to be talking about adoption today. But before we do that, can you please tell our audience a little bit about yourself, personally and professionally?
Sure. I go by Viv or Vivi or Viva. Those are my nicknames. I have a private practice in Miami, Florida. I'm totally in love with my dog, Prince. He used to be a big focal point in the office. When I used to go into the office, I pretty much run most of my sessions virtually online. I do see clients in person. For hypnosis and past life regression at times, although those are also offered via telehealth. I love to work out, ride bike, be in nature, all things that have to do with the ocean. I like hiking. I love to dance. I love going to see live shows. Music is my jam. And I'm super happy to be here with you.
Yeah, those are all great hobbies. Now, how did you get into psychology?
That's a good question. So since I was a little girl, I was always very curious and drawn to like self-help books. There were a lot of things going on at home. You know, we had a lot of problems growing up that I'm not very unique with that. I mean, almost every family has their own set of problems. So I think I was just trying to find answers to understand certain things about myself and about my family. And then I was always really interested in music as well. So I grew up in the nightlife scene at a very young age in Miami Beach. I was really fortunate. It was a very fun and kind of crazy, wild time to be growing up in the 80s and early 90s over there. Yeah. And then I took off to New York. I was in fashion and music there for a while. And after having made some really terrible mistakes, I decided to come back to Miami and sort of pick up the pieces and figure out years worth of therapy that I needed. So I was in my therapist's office, and she completely changed my life, Dr. Renee Nasajon. I used to go to her house, actually. And it was in therapy that I realized, as we were working through like a decade of issues, that this is what I really wanted to do, you know. Okay. And it dates back to me being very young and reading all of these psychology books and, you know, the Celestine Prophecy and spirituality. I mean, I was a really, really young girl when I was very curious about all that. So then I decided, okay, well, I'm going to go back to school. I had dropped out. I was a straight-A student, so that was really difficult for my family. And in my late 20s, I went back to school, and then I literally spent a decade, all of my 30s.
studying,
working in the nightclubs. When I moved back to Miami, I needed to work and make money. So I went back to the nightclub scene. So I was working till like 5-6 in the morning, and then writing 20-page papers.
Yes.
And then, you know, it took like a decade because I just had to work. So I had 2-3 jobs. So it took me a really long time. And I graduated at 40, got licensed at 41, opened
up
my practice, and here I am.
Yeah.
I just dated myself in case you thought I was in my 30s. I'm not.
No, but that's amazing, the fact that you were able to finish your main goal, right? It doesn't matter the age. So that's wonderful.
Thanks.
And I'm sure it's still as rewarding now as it would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, I firmly believe if I hadn't gone through all of that, I might not have picked psychology. Like, yeah. You know, you're always exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. It makes you who you are today.
Yes.
The clashy sentence. You wouldn't be yourself. That's great. I love that you were able to be on both sides of the chair. where mm-hmm. you seek therapy help, and then now you're on the other side where you get to help people. So that's amazing.
That's exactly own. It.
It's an experience.
Yeah. Thanks.
Now, I know adoption has a very close, it has different meanings to you, and it's very close to you, mm-hmm. and we'll get into it. But for now, I would like to generally speak about adoption, right? How can adoption affect your mental health?
So the studies show that every single person that's adopted goes through a traumatic event. Whether you're adopted really early in life or later on in life, you have at least one traumatic event. Even if you're a baby, an infant, and you don't have the memories, mm-hmm. when you are placed with a different family, you already have the traumatic event, and you exhibit, the babies will exhibit in their behaviors. It's super interesting. Even like just the way that they're held by their adoptive mom will feel differently than if how they were held by their birth mother or if it was somebody else, because sometimes it's not your birth mm-hmm. mother who's your main caregiver. So right off the bat, we have the PTSD, the cortisol levels are high, and then they're in fight or flight mode. In addition to that, if you think about it, in order for you to get to the point where you have to get adopted or are lucky enough to get adopted in some cases, there is another traumatic event that occurred. So, all forms of abuse and neglect. Neglect is the single most damaging type of abuse of all. Or there's domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be so many things. So that's where that comes from scientifically. Then you take into account the environment that you're placed in. Hopefully it's a loving, supportive one, but we all hear those terrible stories.
Or going through the foster care system before even getting adopted mm-hmm. can be a lot of different traumatic events.
Very.
Depending, like you said, where you get placed.
Some kids don't even get placed, right?
Yeah.
I think the statistics is last year there were 48,000 kids within our U.S. population that were either in foster care or group homes. They weren't even adopted. And then, there's about 2% of our population as of last year was adopted. That's 1.5 million. And out of that number, a little more than half, so about 55% were adopted by foster parents and only 34 by relatives.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty interesting, yeah.
That is very interesting. What's the difference between the group homes and the foster cares? Is it the same thing?
No. So early in my academia, I was placed, I was driving around doing therapy, offering therapy in homes and the underprivileged, underserved. So I was exposed to quite a bit, not only in Miami, but in LA. Sometimes it was pretty dangerous. And my mom would always be like, can't you just get like a regular job? Like, I'd be like, oh my God, that was a shootout today. She's like, what are you talking about? And I'd tell you, I was like waiting in my car to get out. So I was seeing all these things, and then a little bit later on, they started having me go to group homes. And I didn't know what that really was. And it's just that, it's a home that's shared, by a bunch of roommates. And mm-hmm. they're kids or adolescents that never got placed or maybe were returned are now in the system. And they are, it's the government and the courts that are basically taking care of them.
They're just waiting for them to be 18, basically.
Right.
Okay.
And term out.
Yeah. Our faces were like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so the difference if you're in a foster home would be that you're waiting to be adopted. And then the grouped homes, you're just like done.
You've been
through it. You either got adopted, returned.
Yeah. Foster is like, let's say you said, okay, I'm going to be this child's foster parent and I'm going to take responsibility and help take care of this person, with education and a home environment until mm-hmm. somebody comes and adopts them. That's different. It's like a private, mm-hmm. They're just with you. Where group home, it's with the courts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of already mentioned that adoption can be traumatic, whether you're a baby, a child, an adolescent. In what way? What are some of the adverse childhood experiences that you have seen or that you might have gone through yourself?
Okay, so just to be clear, I was adopted by my dad. So it's not like I was ever, I have no experience of what, you know, being in a foster home or group home looks like at all. My mom had me at a young age. She met my father, the only father I've ever known. They got together when I was pretty young, like maybe 4 or 5. And I don't really have any memories of my birth father. So he was the only man I ever knew to be my dad, right? So he was trying to do the right thing and being an honorable person and adopted me. So I just kind of want to be clear on that. But from what I see in people that are going through the like the foster care system or something like being ripped out of their homes, the studies show that it's always better that the child is really young, let's say one year and below.
Okay.
So if you can adopt when they're, you know, someone's a baby or an infant, the adverse effects are less. If you're adopted later on in life, then you can see all sorts of things like conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, mm-hmm. risky behavior, sexual, drug abuse, anxiety, depression, for sure, attachment disorders, problems with intimacy in the relationships. And then, so to answer the other part of your question, when I found out, which we'll get into that a little bit later, that my dad was my adoptive dad,
okay.
I was definitely older than 13. So I was like hormonal. I think I was going through puberty. So that didn't help either. But, you know, when I found out, I certainly experienced some of the behaviors that I just mentioned. I remember being really confused, very angry, anxiety. And another thing that I didn't mention is, you know, feeling like you don't really fit in anywhere. Like having identity issues is a big one. And even me, that it was just my dad that was the only dad, you know, I grew up with him, basically, and I had a family with him. I had two younger sisters. Even in that, I certainly suffered with identity issues and like that feeling of fitting in.
Yeah, like, where do I belong?
Mm-hmm.
You were yearning for that.
Oh, yeah. I had so many questions. And then it's, you know, and the way that I found out, too, wasn't the best. But, you know, we can go through that later.
When we talk about trauma due to adoption, what can that look like in a child or a teen? I know you mentioned a few examples, but are there overall characteristics of what that could look like?
Sure. Like, I think when I mentioned, like, there's truancy, defiancy with authority, I definitely had that. Anger, acting out, emotional dysregulation, having very disproportionate reactions to things, things of that nature.
Can you get PTSD from the trauma you may go through?
Sure.
During the adoption process?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's the adoption, you know, the trauma if you have to leave your birth family. Let's say you had siblings and then you all get adopted or separated and you go to different places. It's completely heartbreaking. Let's talk about that. The terror of having to go live. I know how I feel when I have to go to someone's house for the first time. I'm always like a little anxious. Imagine like being sent to go live with someone, even though it could be like the best thing that's happening for you at the time. You're not understanding or appreciating that. And hopefully it's a positive experience.
It doesn't matter if they are in a dysfunctional family or not, because that's all they've seen, right? Mm-hmm. They grew up seeing that. So sometimes you take them away from that and they might get hurt. They don't understand it. Also depends on the age, right? Maybe if they're older, they've seen what a functional family is, they might be able to appreciate it a little bit better, but it's still a traumatic event.
Absolutely. And something that I failed to mention, which is huge, are the abandonment issues, right?
Yeah.
So it's the abandonment issues of feeling like you're, like adults don't stick around, you know, that they're just going to leave, disappoint you, let you down.
Like, I'm not worth it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's jump into your story, because I want to know, what was your process, your journey like, and how did you go from, or how did you manage the stress and anxiety when you found out that you were adopted?
Not very well. I rebelled and acted out. I just wanted to be out, and I partied. I was really young. So I found out, so for sure it was when my great-grandmother on my mother's side, because I had a very strong bond with her. It was after she died, and I was 13 when she died. And it was before 15, so I would say between 13 and 15 years old, I see myself in a picture at my parents' wedding. And I don't know, had I not, that picture had been there for a long time, had I not noticed it before, but I took a good look at it and I said, well, how am I in the picture? Okay. So in the picture, I'm there. I'm not supposed to be born, right? So then I said, what's going on here? And then it was like, oh, and they told me this big secret, which I felt like that in and of itself was really difficult. So I think my parents obviously tried to do the best that they could. Did they handle it in the best way? No. The better way to have handled that is for me not to have found it in a picture, maybe to sit me down, because research does show that once you pull out the stigma and like the secrecy behind it and you try to normalize it, it really helps the individual adjust. So there I was finding out that this man wasn't my birth father. And I understand and acknowledge what a privilege that was that he did that for me now, later on in life. But then I just felt like very betrayed that they, you know, it was like everybody knew but me. So I was like embarrassed. I felt like it felt dirty or just very strange. That was just my process. I don't think that they obviously wanted me to feel that way. But in my shoes, I felt like, oh, no wonder I don't fit in. And then I started with that, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. And then I acted out. I rebelled. I rebelled against my parents. I was, you know, going out a lot. I was acting out, and I drove them crazy. And I was upset. I was angry. I was confused. Okay. And then I didn't really deal with it. I just sort of stuffed it. I didn't go to therapy for it. And it wasn't until later on in life when I moved back, you know, I had lived in New York for a while. When I moved back from New York and I went to Dr. Nasahun to do about a decade's worth of issues, it was in her office that I realized, okay, I've got to figure this out, right? Because I can't be walking around with this chip on my shoulder. And then honestly, all of my psychology classes really, really helped ground me. And then in my 30s, well, towards the end, like 39, 40, I went to LA to do my internship at CII. They have community mental health agencies all over California, and they're incredible with the work that they do. And I had some incredible supervisors. They were really, really tough and very intensive supervision. I had 3 different supervisors per week giving me close supervision because I was dealing with early childhood mental health, and my niche was working with kids in the adoption and foster care system and the parents 0 to 5 kids, you know, ages 0 to 5. So I started processing what had happened and my story with my supervisors, especially my main supervisor, Dr. George Bermudez. He was lovely. And he was an older man, 2 doctorates. Like, he was incredible.
He knows it all.
And he was very, paternal.
Okay.
And I just felt like that's exactly what I needed because I had never had a male therapist. And although he wasn't my therapist, when we would sit in supervision, we would go there because he had also a specialty in psychoanalysis. So he would listen differently. And he helped me so much in that year. And we processed a lot. And as I was working with the kids in the foster care system and I was seeing like all this love that can be found in another home, and learning that actually as soon as a child is able to understand and comprehend what adoption mm-hmm. is, that's pretty much when that's your port of entry to start the conversation, to start the process. Because what happens is then you start normalizing it. And, you know, you open it up for communication. You remove that stigma, like there's something wrong yeah. with me that, you know, I was adopted. And, you know, we're talking about children who lose mom and dad. I had my mom. My dad was always in my life. He was the only dad that I've ever known. And then he gave me two sisters. So, in you know, I had a family. So I never, yeah. I had everything that I needed. It was just within me that I had to consolidate. And in my mid-20s, I hired someone to find my biological father's side of the family because I heard they were in Miami. I had already known that my biological father had died years ago, which is how my dad now was able to adopt me, right? Mm-hmm. So when I found their family, I found like my paternal grandparents. And, you know, it was wonderful. I met them, and that's a whole other, I mean, that could be a whole other segment, but... You know, I have two brothers on that side. So
that you didn't know.
That I didn't know. Okay. And I look so much like that side. So another thing growing up is, you know, I have my olive skin and I have like my curly hair. And, you know, on my mom's side of the family, they're very pale, not pale, fair. And they have like straighter hair. And I don't look, you know, I do look like my sisters, but they look like twins.
Okay.
So I always felt like I was different and I didn't really... Like, now I love that. I love my uniqueness. But growing up, like, when you're a kid, you just want to fit in.
Yeah.
And I never really fit in, like, physically. I felt like I didn't fit in the family. Even if they tried to include me, it was my journey. So, I mean, honestly, I think it took, like, 20 years later to really understand. I have a really good relationship with my dad now. I'm very secure in, you know, like, since I was the oldest with my sisters, there's no half sister. It's like we might as well be completely blood related because I was there since they were born.
Yeah, of course.
With my brothers, I feel very close to them, but we didn't grow up together, so it's different.
Not the same.
And my older brother, he lives in LA, and we have a nice relationship. But he ended up finding out that he was fully adopted in his mid-30s when he found me on Ancestry. Again, that's a whole other conversation. It's pretty wild. But I watched his world when I met him come down because he was like, what? Can you imagine? He has two kids. And he didn't really fit in with his parents, but he found out at like 35. mid-30s.
And it's still traumatic for him.
It's, you know, the whole, it's it, no matter what age you are, it's just, unless you're walking in those shoes, it's a very unique place to be. I can't imagine like being fully adopted, like no mom, no dad, and like, you know, you're in a house. But the reality is there are so many kids that go unadopted. Is that a word? And
that stay in the foster care system or in the government.
And you don't have to be blood related to have a family, right? You know that? Like, I appreciate now how incredible it is to choose your family, right? We choose our partners, we choose our friends, we choose children. Like, it was a privilege that I was able to get adopted by my dad and all these children that are out there, and they, you know, there are so many parents that can't have kids or choose to not have their own children and to try to give them a good life. And that leads us into the field of epigenetics and trauma, which clearly states that you can go through that trauma, but as long as you have a positive environment, positive relationships afterwards, you can repair the trauma. Mm-hmm. That can change the sequence of the DNA, right? So it's just about the quality of your relationships and your home life after.
Yeah. What are some of the, if any, long-term effects that adoption had in you or maybe you've seen in some of your clients?
Well, for sure, I definitely turn to substances. I will say I have seen that quite a bit. Everybody reacts differently. You know, some people develop like risky behaviors in a sexual manner. That was never my thing. But you do see that. So I used to run a co-facilitate groups when I was in that internship in LA for that 1 year that I mentioned. We co-facilitated high-risk sexual behaviors with kids that were now placed in homes with a whole family, a whole adoptive family, and there were issues there. And one thing is, I'm not saying that all kids in the foster care system develop sexualized behaviors, but it is quite common. And from what I saw personally for that year, the foster care system, their goal is to get the children placed. So I was a therapist working in these agencies, and the adoptive parents would come to us for help. Like, yeah. I can't have this child acting out on my daughter, my son. I never knew, you know, he had a history. And then it's like their whole world comes down, because it's like they're trying to give a child a loving home, a second start or chance. And they're not being told the history.
The baggage that they come with.
So that's something to kind of watch out for. You never really get the full story. Yeah.
Do they get therapy, like support, after they get adopted? Or it's almost like, here's your child.
Well, I mean, they're supposed to. So I think, you know, I think that from what I saw in that 1 year, they have like wraparound services at these community mental health centers. They have a therapist, a social worker. They have group therapy, they have individual therapy, they have family therapy, and that's what I was doing. So, I mean, for that 1 year that I was there, and it's mandated, it's court mandated. So even if you don't want to do it, they have you
they
go.
They have to. Okay, so that's good.
That's very good. So the support is there.
You kind of touched upon the behavioral consequences. Can you name a few more that maybe... I don't want to just talk about adolescents, but usually adolescents are the ones that act out, right? Yeah. So during that stage, what are some of the behavioral consequences from a traumatic adoption process, or maybe on your personal experience as well?
Well, the defiancy with authority.
That's like
I don't want to listen to you. I don't have to listen to you. Why? You know, whether it's a parent or a teacher. Even sometimes the law, you know, the identity issues, the abandonment issues, it's just like the loss of trust, right? So you start acting out, it's the defiancy, the conduct disorder, the oppositional disorder, you see some ADHD, so the depression.
It comes from the lack of trusting that that authoritative person is actually going to help you, or that they're trying to tell you what to do. Like, is there a root of the cause of why you act out, or is it just giving attitude? Like, I'm adopted,
salty.
So
because some don't people mess don't with feel me. That way. The thing is that I've met some adoptees, and they don't feel that way at all. Okay. So again, it's not a one size fits all. Mm-hmm. It really depends on, it's multifactorial, like how did you find out, what kind of a home are you in, what kind of a home were you in, was it a smooth transition, were you a baby, were you an adolescent, because obviously there's more problems behavior wise if it happens later on in life. So it's very specific to each story.
Okay. That makes sense. When it comes to processing the trauma, what kind of supports are there? You mentioned that the clinic offers individuals and group. What about in your case? What was your support system when you found out?
So I think my family tried to be there for me, but it was too little too late at that point. I was pissed. Okay. I was pissed.
Angry with the world.
Angry. I mean, I just felt like it, you know, everybody knew but me. How could you not tell me? And there are people that sometimes I just had somebody tell me that their parents were waiting for their sibling to be turn 18 to tell them. And I was like, why?
Good luck
why are
with
we
that.
Waiting? You know, but every story and every individual is different. It's just so complex, right? Mm-hmm. Us humans are so complex. So I think my parents tried to be there for me, and my extended family were very close on my mom's side. But I just sort of escaped through me, honestly, through music and substances. I just wanted to dance. I just always wanted to dance it out.
Just want to go out. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to just be free. And honestly, I'm still like that till today. You know, my number one favorite thing to do is concerts.
Yeah.
I travel around and go see shows, live shows from all genres, just because for those few hours, I feel so free, right?
And but now you do it in a healthy way.
Yeah. Now it's very healthy, sure.
Nice.
So everybody has their, you know, it could be, I recommend therapy, right? There's community mental health centers, your local adoption agencies. Talk to a trusted family member. It could be a friend. Mm-hmm. It could be an artistic hobby. It could be anything, but just find whatever modality works for you. Maybe it's dance, maybe it's music, maybe it's photography, maybe it's writing, poetry, maybe it's studying, maybe it's reading. Reading is a great, you know,
exactly.
Everybody can find their own path.
So for you, the one thing that helped you healed was therapy, once you decided that you wanted the help.
Yes.
Right?
I think my parents tried to take me to therapy, and I, of course, what kid wants to go to therapy? I mean,
some do, though.
Sometimes.
But that might be now in 2023. Because back in the day, I don't even know what a therapist was, or a counselor.
That's what I'm saying. Like, back in the day, my family, it's not like the awareness we have now with mental health. Things are different now. Back then, I think, you know, everybody was just trying to, like, do the best they can and hope for the best. But, you know.
But it's impressive that they took you to one, but you're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, I needed
to. Mental dance.
As
I'm
always.
I'm going to move to New York and be free.
As always, I needed to do it on my own terms.
Okay.
And, you know, but I was always very interested in the whys. Even now with my clients, I was like, oh, Dr. V, you're always asking why. It's about the why, the root of the problem. I'm not a surface type of therapist. I like to go in there, go deep, which is why I think I was led to hypnotherapy and past life regression therapy. Okay. That to me is so fascinating. The subconscious mind, like everything that we carry in our shadow and what really makes us tick on the deepest level. And for sure, that probably started because of everything that has happened and that I had to go through and to figure out why.
Yeah. When you see a patient with trauma, what is your to-go treatment? You mentioned hypnotherapy. Does that help with trauma?
Sure, it can. It's great for trauma, especially the hypnosis that I do, that I can do to go in there once you're in that deep state of focused attention. We can work on repairing the trauma. But again, that is not a one-size-fits-all either. I have a lot of history dealing with kids and adults coming to me to deal with their sexual abuse, physical abuse, domestic violence. You know, you have PTSD, which is one singular traumatic event. Mm-hmm. Then you have polytrauma, so that's more than one, right? And then you have the complex trauma, which is like prolonged and repeated over time.
Okay.
You know, what people are going through in Ukraine. That's complex trauma. Sex slavery, human trafficking, that's complex trauma. Domestic violence, when you're living in an environment where you're always in a state of fight or flight, that's complex trauma. So every person needs to be, you know, I have to tailor the treatment plan because what may work for one, I think might re-trigger another. And it also depends on their functioning level and where they're at. Did they just find out, or are they just now wanting to deal with it? That's very, those are two very different things. Am I working with a child who just got out of it, or am I working with somebody who repressed it? Which I had one client, you know, come to terms and had the realization during a session that she, you know, she was sexually abused, and it was very intimate.
Yeah.
And the most raw pain I've ever seen.
Okay.
You know? So I sort of have to assess the person. You know, sometimes I don't think that we should go straight into hypnosis. I work a lot with cognitive therapy first, like the mind
depends.
And the patterns.
Okay.
I built in the spiritual psychology if they're open to it, which I love. And then, you know, the hypnosis is amazing to add it. It's like layering, but
okay.
I, you know, there's TFCBT. which is a cognitive behavior therapy geared towards trauma.
Okay.
So it all depends on what I'm looking at and what we're dealing with.
I understand. Okay, very interesting.
Yeah.
For our listeners that are interested more in adoption, when do you feel is the right time to tell their children they have been adopted? How should they tell them? We kind of mentioned a little bit, you know, break the stigma, talk about it. But what would you tell them would be, is there an exact age or range that would be best?
So again, you know, as early as they're able to understand what that means.
Okay.
And just start knowing. So one thing that I can share is there was this little girl who I still think about. I worked with her during my internship at CII, and she was the most adorable little thing I've ever seen. She was 5 years old, very intelligent, and she was adopted by a family member. So she got really lucky. But when I went to their home to do the therapy, it was like no big deal. You know, they would sit down and their thing was watching Modern Family together. Okay. So you can use a show, and she identified
example.
A lot.
Okay.
I guess I never really watched that show, but I think there's a child that's adopted on there. And they took that opportunity to talk about it. She would tell me about it. She would talk to me about her mother, her birth mother. She had memories. So it all depends. You can use music, you can use pictures, you can just talk.
I'm sure there's books on it too that can help you
tell the
story depending on the age. Yeah.
Yeah. What I don't recommend is, you know, finding out through a picture or like, oh, hey, yeah, by the way, it's like I had been walking by that picture for years. It was in my grandmother's house or something. And I had never really noticed it, which is very strange. But I also don't think that you should wait a very long time to be told, because then not only are you dealing with the reality of like, oh, wait, what? I'm adopted. Then you're dealing with like, well, why did you keep this from me? Why didn't you tell me sooner?
Yeah.
And that's something that I hear often. Again, I'm sure people have their reasons for waiting to tell someone at a certain age, but it's recommended that you try to just take the stigma out. Like, it
the
doesn't
earlier,
have to be like
better.
This big, bad, scary, ugly thing. It's actually a beautiful thing that somebody wanted to give you love and adopt you, whether it's one parent, a blended family, both parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it could be very traumatic for someone, but like you mentioned, also very beautiful. And I don't know about anybody else, but I would feel betrayed too. If I'm older, you kind of lose your identity, right? You become this adult, you think like your brother at 30. That's insane.
Mid-30s.
Yeah, that's like me finding out right now you're adopted. I'd be like, well, thank God I'm trained in mental health. So maybe I can deal with it a little bit better. But seriously, like, I just had an interview about it. You should have told me earlier. But no, it's
intense.
Yeah.
It's super hardcore. And I don't, you know, like, you're literally, your whole world, it's like your whole world as you knew it becomes surreal.
Yeah.
It's like, was that even real life?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, again, talking about it and removing the stigma. But the
very
good thing
important.
Is that we're now living in a day where it's kind of cool to go to therapy. Everybody has a therapist.
Yeah. it's kind of cool
us,
to do a podcast about it too.
Yeah.
So here we are. Breaking the stigma.
Yeah, that's
no,
good.
But for real, it goes for a lot of topics in general. Sex with kids, right? Like, when is the right time to talk about sex? As soon as they understand there is a vagina and a penis.
Agreed.
Like, have a conversation. Don't give it another name, right?
That's so a really good
thing.
Point. It's just basically secrets in general.
Yeah.
Right?
All kinds
I mean,
of topics.
Sometimes, some things are, you know, you're not supposed to tell your kids, but...
But like you said, when they're able to understand the concept, you know, when they're able to process the information and you can kind of break it down, then it's the right time. Or when they start asking questions, when they start telling you, I don't feel like myself or this or that, like maybe they're getting it. Did you ever feel like that? Did you ever try to communicate that you weren't, that you didn't really belong, or you felt weird about it?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I ever communicated it, but I certainly felt it.
Okay.
Again, because I didn't look like anyone in my family. I do look like my maternal aunt. But, you know, my mom, I don't even look that much like my mom. A little bit.
Yeah, but maybe mom, you don't remember saying it. It could have been a comment where like, oh, I don't look like you, or I don't look like my sister or whatever. Like, the parent's the one that knows what's going on. So at that point, maybe you use that as like,
for sure.
By the way,
hey,
let's sit down with some snacks.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the difference between you and the rest of the family.
Yeah,
but yeah,
you know. That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, little things. Doesn't have to be this serious where like, okay, at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, we're going to talk about a serious subject. That is not breaking the stigma, guys. Don't do it that way, please. Oh, my God. Well, I've loved this conversation. Thank you for sharing your personal story as your professional stories, right?
Yes.
And I would love to have you back and talk about the rest of the stuff in another opportunity.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you guys for watching. Don't forget to leave us a comment. Let us know what you thought about this conversation and subscribe to the channel. See you guys next week.